Welcome back to the Red Debate. Tom Burgess here, and I've got Chris Smith with me.
Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
Nervous. Two massive games coming up. We record this on the eve of the Burnley game. Obviously, the Reds play Burnley tonight with fans back in the ground. Very much needing 6 points from six to secure top four following Chelsea's 2-1 win over Leicester last night, which didn't necessarily do us any favours on the goal difference terms. Chris, have you been anything like me looking at the table, looking at all the possible repercussions of any possible outcome of remaining games for each side?
I struggle to do anything but that at the moment, to be fair. I think when we last recorded, I was a lot more pessimistic than you, certainly. You did say that you were confident still that we'd get top four, and I said, given previous form, we'd just drawn with Leeds, and obviously the game after that we drew with Newcastle, didn't we? So I would have said it then as well, that I still didn't think that we'd get top four. And I mean, of course, we still might not get top four, but certainly we're now, well, in the driving seat, and I can't quite believe how we've got there, really. Obviously, the Alisson header we'll talk about, but just the fact that we've crept into this position where over the last eight games, we're suddenly the informed team in the league, aren't we? We've won six and drawn two of the last eight games. So what do you think's changed?
Well, just to go back to your point about my confidence being a bit higher than yours after the Leeds game, I think that's probably right in saying so. That said, the Newcastle game crushed me. The late goal, it just, for me, like, it's totally yo-yoed this race for top four. It's been great viewing for the neutral. But yeah, following the Newcastle game, I thought that was it, really. I thought our time was up. And the real turning point for me, obviously coinciding with the United game, obviously, but the real turning point for me was when Arsenal beat Chelsea. And then you just start to think, hold on, can we? And then it all starts to open up a little bit. There was stuff being put out before the West Brom game about how, because Leicester were playing Chelsea, if we were to beat West Brom, then Burnley, then Palace, it's essentially in our hands. But it's been, nerve-wracking watching it all unfold. And I'm seriously bricking it about tonight. I can't remember feeling like this before a game.
I completely agree. And I think you're right there, though, that it's been almost like it's a battle of who can be the least shit in a weird way. Because, like, Newcastle thumping Leicester as well. Where the fuck did that come from?
Yeah,
and you keep thinking we're dead and buried, because that Newcastle game for us as well was, you're completely right, just a complete sucker play. The way it happened and unfolded, obviously the VAR goal being overturned, and then literally like a minute later, I completely lost it. Like, that was probably the biggest outburst of emotion I've had, negative emotion I've had in a long, long time. I just couldn't believe how poor it was from us.
Shambolic, wasn't it? But I think what we mentioned last time, it touches on a point you've just raised there. It does seem like a battle of who can be the least shit, but we're so used to these run-ins, certainly of the last, well, not last two seasons, but when we've been hot on the tails of City, we've been very much used to these run-ins, thinking you can't drop a point, because if you drop a point, you'll get capitalised on. Whereas here, everyone around us seems to be dropping points, and ironically, the drop points to Leeds and Newcastle have sort of fitted in with the other teams dropping points around us in circumstances you might not have expected. It's a strange one. I remember looking at Leicester's run-in a while back, probably when we were well further off the pace, just thinking there's a solid chance they get very little out of that. Seeing that, for example, Chelsea were playing City, thinking, there you go, there'll be 3 points because City will need that to win the league. It turns out City had it wrapped before then anyway. Aguero messed that penalty up.
Yeah, and
there's been points gained and lost in really odd places. Like, you would not have backed us on the form that we were in at the start of the new year to end up picking things up to the point where we spanked United 4-2 at home.
Well, I think another point worth mentioning as well, though, is the fact that we're only talking about three teams now. And at the Leeds game, Spurs definitely weren't out of the conversation. West Ham were fourth, I think, when we played Leeds. Everton weren't out of the conversation either. So other teams have also just dramatically nosedived.
I've been saying to you all season that Everton and West Brom aren't serious in this. They'll drop off. Tottenham I was more worried about, even though incidentally it looks like West Ham have probably carried on in greater vein than Tottenham have. But That said, if we need them to, I still fancy Spurs to take points off Leicester. It's been a really strange one, hasn't it? It's been great for the neutral, but nerve-wracking to be part of.
It's strange because we could now, we're in a position, if Leicester do drop points to Spurs, we could still not win against Burnley tonight and still have hope on the last day of the season.
Bizarre. I did not want that to happen.
And I also don't want that to happen, but it's possible at the end of the day. And if we do win tonight, you know, the Chelsea could still go out. If Chelsea don't, Aston Villa is not an easy game.
Yeah.
And imagine if that happened. If Leicester beat Spurs, we beat Palace, and Chelsea draw or something against Villa. And Chelsea end up fifth.
On balance, I probably would have preferred a Leicester win last night. On balance, it would have been quite nice to see, not for Brendan, but not it would have been nice to see Chelsea. You know, they've been going on and on and on about, oh, we were in the bottom half of the table, then we get Tuchel, we're in the Champions League final, FA Cup final, we're going to get top four. It would be pretty sweet if they got none of those things.
I agree. I also think,
whilst it probably looks like we're going to have a quiet summer, I do also think it's nicer when supposed, you know, big hitter rivals are going to be less active in the transfer window. For example, it would be, what I mean by that is, if Chelsea are to drop down to the Europa League, they're probably not fishing in the same pond as us with regard to transfers. Now, I don't necessarily know if we will be, but for example, someone like Jadon Sancho is a name that gets mentioned linked to Chelsea and Liverpool. It would be quite nice for him to be able to look at those two proposals and say, well, if I go to Liverpool, I've got Champions League football. If I go to Chelsea, I haven't.
Yeah, I completely agree. The spending power of Chelsea is a definite worry considering the squad that they've got already.
That's a much better way to summarise things. I think if Chelsea are in the Champions League with their spending power, they become a team that could possibly kick on to that next level where they become, at the start of the season, one of the bookies' title favourites, let's say. Whilst Leicester have been great, I don't see them as being competition for us next season. Do you know what I mean? Whereas Chelsea, I feel like Chelsea could potentially move to that next level.
Yeah, they worry me. I do have to say. I think the performances in the Champions League in particular were exceptional, and
yeah, they were good against Madrid.
If Timo Werner could score, they would be deadly.
Yeah,
because he is a big problem for them.
He's a problem, but the rest of his game's quite handy.
He's very dangerous. But I mean, 6 league goals is, I think it's in 34 starts now.
Have you seen Jorginho? Jorginho's their top scorer with 7 penalties.
Is that true?
Yeah, Jorginho. It's crazy that Chelsea are where they are. Yeah, in the league.
Jesus, that is shocking.
So Tammy on 6, Timo on 6, Mason Mount on 6, Zuma's on 5, Pulisic 4, Havertz 4, Giroud 4, Chilwell 2.
Blimey.
As opposed to Rice, where it's all Salah.
Yeah, true. At least their goals are quite spread, I guess. But
yeah. I mean, yeah, we've diverged heavily really here, but I can't call it. We do have to, having watched Chelsea against Leicester last night, I wouldn't fancy Leicester to do Tottenham personally.
I think I don't want to be doom and gloom, but I think anyone looking at us, having watched us play West Brom, would also not quite fancy their chances against us. I think Burnley, with fans back in, and Palace, with Roy's last game, we'll both be looking at the Liverpool fixture saying, yeah, they've got a lot to play for, but they've also got a lot to lose, and they're very beatable. And it's easy to get carried away, but we were poor against West Brom. You know, it took a miracle goal to save us.
I agree. But it does depend who's asking, because Burnley just got spanked 4-0 by Leeds. So
true.
If these people that are watching the game and thinking Liverpool look shaky aren't watching the Burnley-Leeds game and thinking Burnley look shaky, then I don't know what sport they're watching. But
that's true. No, but I agree. I don't want to get too carried away yet. I think we've got to beat Burnley tonight and get to the Palace game. But I do think it's not going to... Like, with this season, we've done nothing comfortably, really. The odd game aside. So I think we'll struggle through both games. I think we will win tonight, but I don't think we'll smash them, and I don't think it'll be convincing. And you know as well as I do that the mentality at the moment of the team is very easy for those little doubts to creep in, isn't it, at the moment? And it filters through the team at the moment.
I've always had a view on this about the rippling effect of anxiety throughout a team.
Mm.
Do you not think we're over the peak of that crest at the moment, though? It feels like the wind's in our sails a bit.
Yeah, I think we've definitely gone past the peak. But I do think when you've got Reece Williams and Nat Phillips as your two centre-backs, and like if you take Alisson's goal out, his kicking is a real issue at the moment for him. He's a world-class keeper still, but it's almost like we've got Alisson's handling and then Mignolet's kicking.
It's a very strange facet of his game, because I don't think anyone out there will deny that Alisson's one of the best keepers around, but he does often look like he's got a rick in him, doesn't he? Yeah. And he doesn't get punished for it so often.
No, I don't know how, beginning... Like that Cavani one against United would have changed the whole game.
Oh, we were buried.
Like how he didn't score that, I don't know. He just passed it straight to him. But he does it most weeks at the moment, where he does something where it's like maybe not as brutal as the Cavani one, but passes it to one of the attackers in a dangerous position. But I just think when you've got someone like Reece Williams and Nat Phillips in, it's the occasion, and it hasn't yet. And I think they've both done decent jobs, Nat Phillips in particular, but it's now the business end, and neither of them have ever been in this position before. And that's what I mean about the ripple effect of like being anxious. If we're 0-0, for example, against Palace, desperate for a winner, will those players be able to handle the pressure? Who knows? I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, I can see us winning both games. I think if you were to ask me what the most likely outcome is that the most likely outcome, I think, is that we win both games. And I think the bookies' odds would reflect that. I think the opinions of the neutrals would probably reflect that. Do I think we'll make it easy for ourselves? Absolutely not. And do I think there'll be many, many moments where we're looking at it thinking we're not going to do this? That's almost certain to happen, I think. Your question being around whether those two younger lads can handle things, I think might even be a bit of a little bit of a subplot, because it seems to me like our difficulty, aside from the United game, our difficulty really all season has been putting big chances away, because our chance creation statistics have been fine. And in fact, you know, our goal difference is actually all right. And that could actually end up being the thing that gets us over the line, albeit only one goal difference better than Leicester's. But in terms of finishing the chances that we're creating, we've been not our usual selves, and we've been off colour in that department as well. I just really, really do not want one of those situations where it looks like we're going, you know, beyond 70 minutes and not having found a breakthrough and looking like we could go on for 3 hours and not score.
That's it, isn't it? You get the early goal, it settles the nerves, and then suddenly you think, right, we're going to steamroll these boys now, because they'll have to come out against us. I think everyone at the moment gets nervous when we go to 0-0 at halftime. Not because they don't think we can win, but just the difficulties we've had in recent months of putting the ball in the back of the net against teams in particular who low block us. I think, especially when you look at our bench, you know, we're so reliant really on the starters, with the odd exception maybe, but you're praying for someone like Shaqiri, for example, to come off and change a game. And he was awful the other night when he came on.
He wasn't very good against West Brom, was he? No. And I mean, obviously, our other change was Wijnaldum, who missed a sitter at the end as well.
Yeah. Interestingly, that Divock's just been completely frozen out. He's not even being used as an impact sub anymore.
Yeah. I'm not too disappointed about that personally, but.
Nor am I, but he's had big moments in the past. And I would assume that, say, we needed a goal, he is probably one that we would throw on.
Yeah, I mean, over the years, Klopp has turned to him at times of need. I'm really very much hoping that we don't have time of need over these next two games, but let's see. Who are you starting in the midfield tonight then?
So I think on current form, Thiago and Fabinho have to play every game now. So, like, there's no rotation there at all for me.
So you're going with Williams and Phillips?
Yeah, definitely. The only option, I think, is who plays as the third midfielder. I would probably go Wijnaldum tonight, but I wouldn't mind Curtis Jones again. I'm happy to be quite aggressive, to be fair, against Burnley, like quite attacking. They're leaking goals at the moment, aren't they? So I think Thiago, if we just chat about him for a minute, because he's certainly worth talking about. And I think both of us have said on previous episodes that we have been slightly deflated with his performances, but what a player he's been in the last month, or even a little bit longer than that. But he's the best player on the pitch, I think, against both United and West Brom. And the way that he controls it with Fabinho alongside him is kind of what you'd expect. But for me as well, it's more the fact that he's just looking fitter. He's giving away less fouls. He's covering areas better as well. Like, his press is a lot better now. And it makes you just think that his fitness wasn't fully there in the first place before the injury. Well, after that, he came back from the injury. And obviously, he had COVID as
well. And COVID. Absolutely. We're completely dominating midfields now. We made Fred look like a Sunday league player. Man United in midfield with and without the ball. I wouldn't go as far as to say that as emphatically against West Brom. But, you know, I do agree that Thiago was... He's just a great player to watch play football. He's like a lesson for younger kids to watch play football. He the way he moves the ball, the way he keeps the ball in tight spaces, the way he manages to find a pass when it just doesn't look on in such a progressive way as well. He's just one of those footballers that when he has the ball, you think something's going to happen.
Yeah, I can just imagine a shame that he's slotted into a team that are struggling to finish so much, because, like, the critiques are always saying, you know, his stats are all about just pass completion, and he doesn't really register assists, or he scored one, hasn't he?
He scored one, and he nearly scored one against West Brom as well.
Yeah, he did. And which is disappointing
Rams it in.
Yeah, that's true. But I think, on a normal season, when the boys up front are absolutely firing and the movement's excellent, he'd certainly have, you know, at least 5 assists, I think.
I can't wait to watch him play next season, to be honest, mate. So who would you play
alongside Fabinho and Thiago then, if we're both in agreement?
I'm going to go with Wijnaldum tonight. It just has to be. Ginny's his man, his go-to man in the big fixtures. I appreciate West Brom was a big fixture as well, but Ginny Wijnaldum has essentially played all season. It has to be Wijnaldum for me. Although, do you make anything of this chat on, I don't know if it's filtered outside of Twitter, but this chat that Wijnaldum didn't even celebrate Alisson's goal. Did you see people talking about that?
I did see people talking about that, but I do think that's just the narrative of he's leaving. I think everyone knows it now. And there has started to be some bad blood. You know, I love him, and yeah, I'm happy to argue with anyone how important he's been to this team. And I genuinely think anyone who thinks and comes out and says that he's been a shit player and, like, I don't care if he goes, is just utterly deluded, because in every big game, Klopp turns to him. And without him this season, we'd have been awful. There were times when we could barely field a midfield, and he was the one constant. And people forget, you know, we were top at Christmas, and he was a big part of that. And yes, his form has also suffered, but for his Barcelona antics alone, he is a club legend, and he should leave with no bad blood. And I don't understand why people are suddenly trying to, like, say he doesn't care anymore, because, I mean, Klopp's given him the armband quite a few times this season. There's no way Klopp would do that if Genie's head and heart wasn't with the club still.
Yeah, I think the obvious response to anyone who doubts Wijnaldum is basically, well, do you doubt Jurgen Klopp then? Because Jurgen Klopp, as you say, he has been his go-to man, and he's arguably been one of his best signings. He's not the most glamorous footballer. It frustrates people greatly, and I do understand why it would frustrate people greatly, but it frustrates people greatly that he's, you know, appearing to be more dynamic when he plays for Holland, scoring more, assisting
it's
more.
It's a systems thing though, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the thing to say about Wijnaldum now, or back end of last season, is not the season to be saying it, but if you watch Wijnaldum from in the ground, you see a lot more of his role than you do on the television, because I'm sure he's the sort of player that the fullbacks love playing with. I'm sure if you asked Andy Robertson, he bloody loves playing with Ginny Wijnaldum.
100%, yeah. 100%. Yeah. I have never really seen a player that is more suited to a role than him.
What, to that wide eight position on the left?
Yeah, he's just built for it, isn't he? Like, he is literally the perfect system player in this Klopp team for that position. And, like, other players have really struggled to nail it down because it's hard. Naby Keita struggled. Coutinho struggled in that sort of, like, that position. Yeah, Thiago struggled in it because it is so demanding. And from not just a physical point of view, but positionally as well.
Because from a tactical point of view and a technical point of view, in terms of space coverage, yeah, when Fabinho wasn't even... was barely getting in the team and looking fucking awful when he first arrived, because the role of a Klopp midfielder is very different to what they're all used to. I think Klopp, Wijnaldum's somewhat in the mould of Dirk Kuyt, maybe even more so, one of these players that's a product of these Dutch academies where they get trained to play every position and they can play every position and they're tactically comfortable in any role that they're given. I think managers do rely on players that they can give a role to and know full well that they'll fulfil that role. It's why Klopp loves Milner as well. But Wijnaldum's been such a big exponent of that.
I completely agree. And anyone who thinks he is just that player needs to just look back at his highlights at Liverpool and his Dutch performances, because he's definitely not just a workhorse. And there's this perception that he is just that, basically. He's leg room, isn't he? An engine in there. But he can do it all, and we just don't ask him to do it. And I almost feel slightly sorry for him, where he hasn't obviously sold himself to the system, but he's gone from, you know, a player who does get the plaudits every week at Newcastle, where he's a goal scoring midfielder, and naturally
he was essentially a forward at Newcastle.
Yeah,
he was, and he
does it for Holland as well. And they're the players that get all the plaudits, and he sacrifices himself for the team. And the team, I'm pretty sure in saying, would not have had the same success, or maybe same success, but level of success, without someone like him in there. And he's going to be a really hard player to replace, I think.
He's a really steady footballer. He's a very steady individual. He's a reliable character in terms of his availability, but also in his consistency of performance. He's
never really lower than like a six, is he? And he, at the same time, he's rarely higher than an eight, apart from some big moments. He's always a seven, basically.
He does have games where he doesn't affect the game much, but he's not... I can't really remember him making crucial errors. He's not a player that gives the ball away. He's not a player that, you know, is found wanting for effort, this sort of stuff. He's a consistent performer. You kind of know what you're going to get from Wijnaldum. And he is capable of some moments of magic as well, every now and again, albeit quite few and far between. So Klopp's going to go for him tonight then, eh?
I think so. Big game, must win. The only argument, I think, is it slightly negative, which, yeah, you could argue it is, given his assist and goal scoring record. You know, Curtis Jones is probably the more aggressive choice. And I wouldn't, as
or
I said, I wouldn't be
Chamberlain's
against...
Chamberlain's fit.
Is he fit, though? That's the question. I personally definitely wouldn't start Oxlade-Chamberlain, given how rusty he's looked since he's come back. I think, at best, he's a off the bench option, and I would like to see us use him, definitely. But given the importance of tonight's game, I think it has to be one of Wijnaldum or Curtis Jones. What's your thoughts on Curtis Jones? And if we went with Jones today, are you happy with that? Because I love him, and I think you do too.
I love Curtis Jones, and I also am happy with the idea of Wijnaldum coming off the bench. I'm happy with either way around. I think Jones knows Klopp can trust him. Because you mentioned that period earlier in the season where we could barely field a team. When Thiago first came in, he was playing alongside Wijnaldum and Jones most weeks.
Yeah.
I should imagine when Thiago arrived, he was surprised at the technical level of this young lad, Curtis Jones, who he probably had never heard of. Curtis Jones is a fantastic technical footballer. I think one of his difficulties has been and probably will continue to be that particular role that he's asked to play, because it is an unusual one. Mm. And Curtis Jones is not the sort of lad that you would look at and think that if things were to revert to a flat 4-4-2, he's not a central midfielder.
No, and it's interesting you say that, though, because some areas of his game that are required to do that role have massively improved this season.
Oh, hugely. His work off the ball is excellent now.
Yeah, excellent.
Against Man United.
Excellent.
He came on against Man United. I was surprised at the substitution to bring him on. But he came on against Man United. And I wondered whether he had a role to just sit on Pogba. And he did it.
Yeah.
And Paul Pogba's a big lad.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And that's where they got the winning goal from. Well, the final goal, wasn't it?
Talk me through it.
What? The final goal?
Well, no. Jones's impact. I can't even remember.
Well, just... It was, you know, he came on, provided a bit of energy in the middle. And I think he's been watching Henderson about the press, because he never used to do that before. He was always sort of like your silky dribbler, wasn't he?
Off the ball,
a little bit of a liability. But he's very front-footed now on the defence. And the fourth goal against United is a good example of, we surrounded the player and he was the one who played the ball through to Salah, who was obviously wide open. But...
Yeah.
he just,
I just couldn't remember how we turned the ball over. I know you put the, yeah, I remember he put the ball through. I just couldn't remember how we turned the ball over.
We just swapped him. Like, I don't think he made the tackle, but it was more sort of there was two or three players around Pogba.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think top talent, and he could be the replacement, I guess, for Wijnaldum.
I absolutely love Curtis Jones. It's another podcast, isn't it? But I think we probably do need to and will sign a central midfielder this season, next in the summer. Agreed. Sorry. But agreed. Let's save that discussion for another day, because I'm going to come back to your point about having been threadbare at one point. The idea that we've spent maybe 5-10 minutes talking about our lineup and we've digressed beyond any of the discussion goes to show that essentially the only decision the club to make tonight, in our minds, is does he go Wijnaldum or does he go Jones? That tells you a lot, doesn't it?
About it does. And our options. The Jota injury obviously put the nail in the coffin there, because otherwise you'd be having a discussion about Mane or Firmino as well. But I'd be shocked if anyone other than the normal front three started today.
So would I, yeah. He can't really do anything else, can he? Unless Shaqiri comes in, he almost can't do anything different to those three.
No, very little, I guess, options.
The other question is, does he park Fabinho onto Chris Wood? Or does he let Reece Williams deal with it?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because if you're Chris Wood, you're looking at Reece Williams and you're thinking, this is going to be fun. But at the same time,
Reece Williams can't mark
a player like that, you know, because Reece Williams is tall and should be good in the air. That should be his bread and butter. So maybe Reece Williams at the same time and Nat Phillips are thinking, yeah, I'd like to play against players who want it in the air rather than sort of your Vardys who are going to run in behind you.
Well, in that, if Reece Williams is to play with his peer group, if when Reece Williams plays for the under-21s, for example, he's probably the sort of centre-back that your big target number nines don't want to play against. Because Reece Williams is bloody huge, isn't he? There were those photos circulating of the then and now photo of Alisson hugging Van Dijk and Gomez, and then now him hugging Phillips and Williams. And that Phillips and Williams are bigger than Van Dijk and Gomez. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Gomez isn't a big centre-back, is he?
He's not, but he's more robust than Williams, for sure. He's not more robust than Phillips, but Williams still has some filling out to do.
He's a bit too skinny and lightweight at the moment still, isn't he?
He is. He looks like he's put a bit of weight on. But that said, as you mentioned, he is a big lad. He that probably is what he would deem one of his more, you know, one of his stronger facets of his game, his aerial dominance. Now, Chris Wood bullies everyone in the league bar Van Dijk, doesn't he, really? But, you know, looking at things, is Fabinho playing at centre-half going to combat Chris Wood and Ashley Barnes as an aerial duo? I don't know. Fabinho's an excellent centre-half, but largely for his one-on-one defending and organisation. Will him coming in ahead of Williams give us an upper hand in terms of the aerial dominance that they're going to have? I think probably not. I think they'd probably aerially dominate Fabinho just as much as they would Williams, personally.
I agree. And I think the key is to stop the ball in the first place. And that's where Fabinho comes in.
Fabinho is probably the best in the league.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I'd probably play Wijnaldum as well. Form a decent defensive wall and cut out the balls into them. And if it does get into them, you know, you've got Fabinho snapping in front of them and either Reece Williams or Nat Phillips behind them. So I'd like him to play close to both of the centre-backs to protect them a little bit. But, yeah, prevent the ball getting into them in the first place. I think Trent and Robert have got a big night to stop, particularly Dwight McNeil, getting those balls in, because he is dangerous.
I love Dwight McNeil. Really,
what, for us?
Dwight McNeil. No, I just like
him. All right, I thought you meant I'd love him for us.
No. If Klopp came out
and said, yeah, we're going to sign Dwight McNeil as our big center signing, I'd be fuming.
Well, the last time we spanked 20 million on a left back, we haven't ever seen him really, have we?
Oh God, what a myth. I genuinely can't believe that Robertson has played, we started every Prem game and 8 of the 10 Champions League games. Is there a more underused player in the whole first team squad than Tsimikas?
Tsimikas must wonder what's going on, mustn't he, really? But
the myth, isn't he? I know we've spoken about midfield and defence now, and obviously the strike force speaks for itself. I don't think we need to cover Salah. But Alisson, we've talked a little bit about his weaknesses with the ball at his feet, but just, I need to hear your thoughts about the header, because we haven't really spoken about this. Obviously, we weren't with each other when it went in. I assume you went as wild as I did.
I absolutely did. It's the first and only goal that my girlfriend has ever celebrated.
It was that, the same for me dramatic. As well.
Yeah. Liz celebrated it as if she was an Arden fan. That's when you know it's a special moment.
It's true, and I think it wasn't just the way obviously it happened or my reaction, but it was the reaction of the players as well. And when he's like crying at the end, my wife Nicola was also basically crying, like almost more emotional than me. And when I told her, like, oh yeah, like he'd lost his dad, like, you know, the moment of it all was just so iconic. She just, like, I've never seen her react to a football game like that. Even the Barcelona result, you know, the Champions League comeback, my wife was still, from an emotional point of view, more emotional for Alisson than any other result or moment I've ever seen. And for
he's
me,
he's just a lovable person, isn't he, Alisson Becker?
He's so lovable, yeah. And you could see how much the team love him as well. Like the reaction of the players, I think, was amazing, the way that they celebrated with him. Salah's like passion and stuff. It was just a magical moment in football, wasn't it?
It was a special moment. And Liverpool Football Club are followed in close pursuit by special moments. We've had so many over the years. But this one really feels like we need to top it by getting that top four. Because you know, were we in Tottenham's position or West Ham's position, he wouldn't have gone up for the corner because he's nothing, you know. He went up for the corner because we need those points, because we need to get Champions League qualification. We've got to go and do it now for it, haven't we?
It just changed everything, didn't it? I was bleak after a big night out and the performance was massively underwhelming. So when it happened, it was like the best hangover cure I could have ever imagined. But it was also like a shot of adrenaline in the arm that, fuck, top four is actually on. So if we didn't get it now, given that it's in our hands, it would be utterly brutal.
It was the best moment of the season, I think.
I think so.
I think. It's the best moment of our season, which is madness to say, a last-minute winner against West Brom, who were already, you know...
Yeah, I mean, they're utterly shit. And yeah, that's the bizarre thing about it. It's like one of their moments where other clubs could potentially ridicule us that we're celebrating like that. But then when you see the goal and you realise it's Alisson and, you know, the year that he's had, and the goal is fucking great, by the way. I saw a great tweet and it was like the only header Nat Phillips has lost all season. And it's the image of Phillips trying to head it in and Alisson. It is such a good header.
I still think,
like, I haven't heard any chat from any neutrals or rival fans like rinsing us, because I think everyone kind of, it's a magical football moment, not just for Liverpool, but I think everyone can see that obviously it's a rare thing for a keeper to score, but just the fact of who it was and what it meant and the emotion behind it, I think everyone kind of felt kind of good for him, apart from probably Chelsea and Leicester fans.
Yeah. and additionally, how it's a goal scorer's goal as well. Often when a keeper scores, there's a ricochet, it's bumbling around, it goes in off their arse or something. Yeah. Yeah, Alisson Becker rose like a premium number nine there, nodded that in. It was a glorious goal.
Goal. What a man.
It was. Fancy him to go up again tonight?
I mean, he's a threat if we need him. Why not? Chuck him in there. I'm just glad he did go up because, you know, Klopp said it wasn't even him who sent him up, so... It's just one of those moments, isn't it, where you can't describe it. Who knows why he went up? Would he have gone up, you know, if the same game happened? There's a 50-50 chance maybe he didn't go up for it for another one. So, I mean, it's just, I genuinely couldn't believe it. Like, that will never be forgotten for me, I don't think.
Even if we
miss out now on top four still, I'll always remember that moment.
Tinged with some sadness if we don't, but wrap up with two further points. The first of which, do you remember against Bournemouth in 2018? This is very specific, but against Bournemouth in 2018, Josh King was clean through to a bouncing ball and Alisson Becker charged out of his box and won a header and absolutely clattered Josh King. Do you remember that?
I do remember that, yeah.
I tweeted at the time on the Red Debate account, no idea why I said this at the time, but I said, mark this tweet, Alisson Becker's going to score a header for us one day. And it was the first thing I thought about when he scored. I was like, let me find that tweet, that'll do numbers. And it got about 20 likes.
So it's there for everyone to see, though, in writing, that you called it.
Exactly. It's there. It's the moment. I can't even remember what my second point was going to be, other than massive, massive game tonight. What are you doing if we celebrate? What are you doing if we win tonight?
Pints, I think, is the only option, isn't it? Because the nerves will just be too much. My biggest fear is we win tonight and this would literally be the stuff of nightmares, but Roy fucking Hodgson in his last ever game in management fucking does us. And it would be Palace again. They still don't let us, you know, let it go after the bloody, what do they call it? That one night in Paris or whatever it is. That's it. Christambul. Yeah. One night in Paris.
One night in Paris is something rather different.
Not to be confused with a celebrity sex tape, yeah. But yeah, Palace doing us, particularly Roy Hodgson, would literally be my worst nightmare.
One night in Palace.
Someone should have coined that. I don't know where that came from.
Someone really should have coined that. If we beat Crystal Palace on the last day of the season, we'll call the reaction show One Night in Palace.
We'll make a tape called One Night in Palace.
This is not how I expected that question to be answered. But we'll leave it there. Enjoy the game, everyone.
Yeah, enjoy. Thanks for listening.